The 2023-2024 CAF Confederation Cup semi-final between RS Berkane and USM of Algiers is in complete and total jeopardy. And it has nothing to do with football. It has everything to do with politics. Many people don't really understand it. We're going to do our best to try and explain what happened and what might be next between the two sides and for the overall status of the competition. Welcome to another episode of the African Five-A-Side podcast. My name is Maher Mizahi, and I'm your host. And as always, this podcast is brought to you by AfricaAsACountry.com. So to be completely honest, initially I wasn't thinking of doing a video about this because anything Algeria versus Morocco at the moment or vice versa is very, very toxic online, especially on X, formerly known as Twitter. There's so much toxicity that you don't really want to get involved. There's so much bad faith, people lying, people insulting, that it's almost like trying to step into a snake pit and not get bitten, which it's impossible. But at the same time, this story is so big. I've done such a thorough job of trying to cover the interclub competitions in Africa that I couldn't take myself seriously as a journalist if I didn't make a video on it. And as I know that most people on my channel here that are watching, that are following, care about the football, care about the politics, and don't generally have, you know, an agenda or don't generally buy into propaganda, I'm hoping that the comments on this video, if people are interested, are going to be a lot healthier, critical, and transparent than some of the stuff you see on social media. Anyways, I'm going to start off by saying a disclaimer. I'm Algerian. Just going to lay that out right now. I live in Algeria, and I have my own opinion of the entire situation between Algeria and Morocco. And to be honest, those opinions have fluctuated over time, and as I've learned more about the conflict, as I've spoken to Sahrawis, as I've spoken to Moroccans, as I've traveled places, my opinion's sort of gone back and forth, and I have an opinion right now, but I don't think it's useful to state it. But I just wanted to all lay that all out on the table so you know where I'm coming from. But what I'm going to do in this video is I'm going to try my best to not include any of my personal views or any one-sided views at all. What I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to present how both sides see and portray the situation, because I think that's the only way you can accurately do this and educate an external or a third party audience. People sometimes try to say that X, Y, Z happened, but you can't do that in this conflict, because this is really one of those conflicts where, you know, there's three sides to every story. It's actually not even three sides, because usually it's this side, and the truth, but this one is more like the truth is sort of subjective, in my opinion, and how people see it. So anyways, let's begin. And I think you can't talk about what happened last week between RS Berkane and USM of Algiers without at least getting to an elementary political explanation, historic explanation. And what people have to know is that at its core, this is a decolonization problem. There's a region in Northwest Africa called the Western Sahara whose status is not really defined yet. This used to be a territory that was colonized by the Spanish until 1975. Morocco historically has seen this territory as its own. Algeria and most of Africa at the time didn't really see this as part of Morocco. And so eventually what happened is that parties went to the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, who ruled that, you know, this wasn't an empty territory. This wasn't a territory that necessarily Moroccans ruled prior to colonization, and that the people there had a right to self-determination. And I'm paraphrasing and I'm speeding through a lot. When the ICJ made that ruling in 1975, Morocco had what they call the Green March, which is tens of thousands of people walked down into what they call the southern provinces of the territory. And they really took 75% of the territory, and Mauritania agreed to take the other 25%. For Moroccans, this is like one of the most glorious days in Moroccan history. They see this, you know, as them returning to their territory before colonization. For them, it was like a kind of decolonization, a kind of independence. For Algerians or for Sahrawis in the region who are sort of pro-self-determination, they didn't really see things that way. They saw this as a sort of mass invasion or an occupation contrary to international law. And so the Polisario Front, who Morocco consider, separationists or rebels, but the international community sees them as a legitimate representative of the Sahrawi people. They go to war in 75, and this war lasts between 1975 and 1991. And eventually, you know, like the Mauritanians sort of say, we don't want this. They kicked the Mauritanians out. That area, the 25%, is sort of recovered by the Polisario Front. There's a buffer zone there, really. Some people say it's sort of a no man's land. But that's part that Morocco still haven't recovered. If you're Moroccan or if you're Sahrawi or on the other side of this conflict, you're going to say they still haven't occupied. And so when a ceasefire is declared in 1991, both sides agree that a referendum is to be held. Anyways, the referendum keeps getting pushed back and back and back, and the sides don't agree on who should have the right to vote. And in the meantime, things, you know, time is passing, Morocco is building infrastructure, people are moving, things are developing, and what settles is what they call, you know, in international politics, you know, the fait accompli, which is basically when something is the way it is over so many years of time, that's what sort of ends up becoming legal, that's what ends up being accepted, you can't change it. And so in 2007, 16 years after they agreed to hold a referendum, Morocco sort of takes self-determination off the table, proposes an autonomy plan. And they do a great job of, you know, lobbying Western powers. And I think Western powers would prefer that Morocco sort of has this territory. You know, many of them have strong relationships with Morocco, and they think, you know, better Morocco, who we have a good relationship with, than, you know, this other entity, the Polisario Front, taking over, and we don't know what's going to happen if they take over. We don't know if we're going to have good relationships with them. We don't know if they're going to be able to control the territory, and so on and so forth. Anyways, so that's pretty much where we are. 2007 is where we are today. So Morocco holds on to 75% of the territory, 25% is sort of in limbo. There's a huge wall separating the two, lots of landmines, and yeah, that's pretty much where we are. Neither side has really come to the negotiating table, and things have actually gotten worse, where the ceasefire of 1991 was actually broken in 2020, 2021. So I think one of the questions that a lot of people ask is, why does Algeria care? Algeria cares because Algeria doesn't really trust Morocco. They see it as a sort of expansionist regime that never really accepted, you know, its borders of 1956 and that always wanted to expand. And I think even Morocco would accept that argument. When I say Morocco, I mean the government. They feel that they've been hard done by colonization, and they had, you know, parts of their territory carved away by colonization, and they still haven't fully decolonized their territory. So even places like Ceuta and Melilla, the Spanish enclaves, the Western Sahara, Morocco feels like these are historically, you know, their lands. Some even say, you know, they have visions of a greater Morocco, and they even think that, you know, Mauritania, parts of Mali, parts of Algeria, Western Algeria, were historically Moroccan, and that colonization is the reason why Morocco doesn't extend as far as they would like it to. And so, yeah, there's, you know, 1963, there was something called the Sand War, where Morocco tried to invade West Algeria and take that land. 1975, there's the Green March that we mentioned, where Moroccan citizens sort of walk down into the southern provinces, what they would call the southern provinces, what the international community calls the Western Sahara. And so by the way, when that happens, you know, the Algerian regime is very, very unhappy. They kick out Moroccans that were living in Algeria. And really, the relationship between Morocco and Algeria is like this. Boom, 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 boom. It's mostly trending downwards, but sometimes there are ups. Sometimes, you know, there are periods of, you know, warmth and reconciliation. And it's a shame because, you know, the two countries, you know, it's the same people, the same language, the same culture, the same food in a lot of places, the same dress. But the governments are absolutely do not get along, and they're very, very unwilling to compromise on this position. And really, it all comes to a head in 2021 when Algeria breaks relations. And they name several reasons for why they decide to break relations with Morocco. They talk about, you know, a media campaign or media war from, you know, Moroccan proxy media outlets. They talk about the Pegasus scandal, where, you know, Morocco allegedly used an Israeli spyware to sort of spy on up to 6,000 Algerian numbers, if I'm not mistaken. They talk about the normalized ties with Israel and Morocco inviting, I believe it was the Israeli defense minister, onto its territory. And he said, you know, that Algeria was a problem for Moroccan land, which, you know, that's unprecedented for an Israeli defense minister to come to North Africa and sort of what Algeria would consider threaten another country. And then even the sort of straw that broke the camel's back, in a sense, was that the Moroccan representative to the UN, Omar Hilali, went and presented, you know, a tract with a map of Algeria without the Kabylie region, which you know, was seen as sort of very, very provocative for Algeria. Algeria asked Morocco if that was their official position. They never responded, and so Algeria decided to cut relations, and that's been the case for 3 years now. And since then, it seems like every single 6 months we have a problem in football between Algeria and Morocco. So I tried to my best to be neutral there. You know, I'm not gonna. There's no way I could have talked about everything that happened between Algeria and Morocco. It really would be here for 3 hours, maybe even longer, maybe 12 hours. But I'm just trying to help you understand that this was a dispute about a territory that Morocco has aspirations for. Algeria doesn't have aspirations for, but Algeria is intransigent, absolutely insistent on Morocco not being able to take this territory by force and wanting them to go through sort of international processes. Anyways, let's get back to the match. So what happened? RS Berkane, a team from Morocco, actually from East Morocco, close to the Algerian border, historically a place that's actually welcomed a lot of Algerian freedom fighters, you know, during the Revolutionary War, culturally maybe seen as, you know, very close to Algeria. And the team of the FRMF president, Fouzi Laqja, RS Berkane, who had had so much success in this competition in recent years, at the beginning of the season, they started to play with a map of Morocco right here in the middle of their shirt. And it's the map of Morocco with its southern provinces, what they call our southern provinces, what we would call the Western Sahara, all the way across, fully red with, you know, the green star smack dab in the middle. For Moroccans, this is absolutely normal. We're just putting the map of our, you know, country on our shirt. Algeria doesn't see this as innocent. First of all, they don't trust Fouzi Laqja. Fouzi Laqja is, for people that don't know, part of the Moroccan government. He's a minister delegate in charge of budget, if I'm not mistaken, for the government. He's somebody that is part and parcel, you know, of the Moroccan regime. He's somebody that, you know, is sort of spearheading Morocco's sports diplomacy, which Algeria sees, you know, as one of the sort of tools or strategies that it's using to sort of normalize its control over Western Sahara. If I'm not mistaken, even Berkane's president, Hakim Bouabdallah, also has some kind of governmental role. So they see, first of all, this club as not, you know, a regular run-of-the-mill club. What happened then was about a week prior to Berkane coming to Algeria, this part I haven't confirmed, but there are some credible whispers that the Algerian Federation sent a correspondent saying to not come to Algeria. The reason why I'm giving this a little bit of credence and credibility is because there's a Moroccan media outlet named Al-Umq, A-L-3-O-M-K, who actually reported on this 4 or 5 days prior to Berkane coming to Algeria, saying that they would have problems if they came with their jersey. Nonetheless, Berkane came to Algiers. They were greeted by the USM of Algiers president, you know, with the traditional North African thing of they give dates, they give milk or buttermilk, flowers. According to reports, they were very quickly processed, but their jerseys were confiscated. And you even see videos of players leaving the airport, getting onto their bus, meaning that they were very quickly processed, and then they returned and they went back into the airport because their equipment wasn't released. And I think here the Moroccan players and the Moroccan club wanted to make a stand, a principled stand, where it was like, okay, you're not going to release our equipment, then we're not leaving the airport. And they almost wanted to stage a sort of sit-in in the airport, and they stayed at the airport for 10 hours. They were repeatedly told by the airport authorities that they can't stay at the airport anymore, that they have to leave, and that's when sort of got tensions where the club say that they were insulted by airport authorities, the airport authorities say that they were insulted by the club, vice versa. I wouldn't be surprised if it was either way, and nobody really knows unless you were there. Anyways, eventually what happens is in the evening, CAF assures them that their jerseys would be released and that they could go to their hotel and that the following day they would receive their jerseys. The following day, CAF sends a letter to the Algerian Federation saying, this is the jersey that Berkane entered into the TMS system, where you register all of your players, you put the color of the jerseys, etc., the model of the jersey, and as a result, this was authorized by CAF. They have to play, as they started the competition with this jersey, they have to play the rest of the competition with this jersey, no questions asked. So you have to do your best to help release the shirts from Algerian customs. Algeria sort of swept away this letter from CAF. It came from a man named Ahmed Chinoudaw, I believe, who is one of the Egyptian staffers. They said, you know, this doesn't even come from the CAF general secretary. There's no stamp. That's very important in Algeria, is a stamp. They said, you know, based on what logic are you guys ordering us to do this? And the reason why, you know, FAF, the Algerian Federation, and the Algerian government feels very strongly is because you can find it all over, you know, FIFA regulations and statutes, CAF regulations and statutes, that no political slogans, no political propaganda is allowed to be on, you know, shirts or in the stadium. Now, Moroccans are going to say our map is not political propaganda. So here's the thing. That map is not recognized by the United Nations. The United Nations, you know, recognizes, if you look at a map on just look on Google Maps, look on, you know, the UN regulated map, the Western Sahara is sort of, you'll see a dotted line between the Western Sahara and Morocco. You won't see like the entire thing is Morocco. And so the United Nations is considered neutral. That's really the map that international community uses. So Moroccans will see that map, you know, as completely normal, but the rest of the international community, especially Algeria, won't. They'll see that as, you know, a sign of a political propaganda. In any case, if you look at the equipment regulations that FIFA has, you know, Article 10.3.6 says that there can be no shapes of a country on a jersey. Now, some Moroccan fans have correctly pointed out that Mauritania played the last AFCON with the shape of their country on a jersey. So the South African FA has the shape of their country in their crest. There are a few different, I believe, Cape Verde. So there are a few different, Cote d'Ivoire as well. There are a few different examples of countries doing this, especially not necessarily clubs. But they're always using the maps of the, you know, UN mandated areas of their territories, not one that wasn't UN mandated. There were occasions, for example, Ukraine once had Crimea as part of their map on their jersey, and apparently they ran into some problem with the authorities there. We all know about the club in Chile, Palestino, which has, you know, the shape of Palestine in its entirety, sort of, as it was, you know, prior to the creation of Israel, the State of Israel in 1948. They have that on the back of their jerseys, and they have been fined in the past for that and have been sanctioned in the past for that as well. And so I think it's one of those things where if it's not controversial, it can sort of pass through. But if it is, it should never be authorized. And this is really the root of the problem. The root of the problem for me is that CAF authorized this shirt at the beginning of the season, knowing that they could have problems if they, you know, even though, you know, Berkane played in South Africa, they didn't have any problems, but they ended up playing in Algeria, and now they have problems. So why did CAF authorize this shirt? You know, and by the way, the Confederation of African Football has to be neutral in terms of political affairs. This is another part of the FIFA statutes, you know. The Confederation has to be neutral, and neutral has to be what the UN sort of mandates. And so the UN mandates what the Moroccan territory is on a map. CAF sort of has to follow that. And so this, for me, is the biggest problem, is CAF made the decision to authorize this shirt, and now both sides are entrenched in their positions. And what ended up happening was, on the day of the match, and I went to the stadium, and we all knew that this match was not going to take place, but we all went to the stadium anyways. Berkane players still didn't have their shirts. The Algerian authorities made them different shirts without the map. They hung them in the dressing room for Berkane. Both sides sort of knew that the match wasn't going to be played, but they went through the motions, you know, because now this is going to be a legal battle. So they showed up to the stadium. The USM of Algeria side came out and warmed up. The Berkane side just stayed in the dressing room the entire time. And then, you know, a few minutes before kickoff, USM of Algeria came out without the referee and without the Berkane side, which means, in my opinion, that USM of Algiers will be sanctioned, because if the referee came out and blew his whistle, that's going to signal that the forfeit is coming from Berkane's side. But because the referee didn't come out, he must have adjudged the conditions of the match can't take place because Berkane didn't have their shirts. So I'm sure they're going to sanction USM of Algiers and make them lose the match 3-0 at home. But the Algerian Federation, USM of Algiers, have already said that they're going to be going to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. They don't believe that the Confederation of African Football based their decision to ask the Algerian authorities to release the shirts on any legal basis, because they have the FIFA regulations, the FIFA statutes in front of them. And so the Algerian authorities, by the way, said that we can either make alternative shirts for you, or you guys can just cover the map, you know, with some tape or something. But the Moroccan club, I think, refused, and it was predictable that they were going to refuse. So that's the position we're in now. The return leg for this match, the CAF Confederation Cup, is supposed to be this weekend, four or five days from now. We still haven't gone to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, and we don't know what's going to happen. We're expecting that CAF is going to sanction USM of Algiers, and they're going to go to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. I mean, based on the laws as I read them, they're going to overturn that decision. And the biggest problem here is that CAF looks like an unfair arbiter and an amateur arbiter. They look like, yeah, complete amateurs. It's like you put yourself in a position where you're not seen as neutral, you're not seen as objective, and you're not seen as credible. And as a result, this is going to do long-term damage to the reputation of the Confederation of African Football. And this is not something that's new. This is something that's taken place really since over the last 5-6 years. We've seen so many cases where clubs, they don't really care if CAF sanctions them, because they're just going to go to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, who they see as more fair and more just. And so, yeah, the day of the match was interesting. 50,000 people in the stadium. And, you know, it's a shame that the match didn't go through, because it's one that I was really looking forward to. I have no idea what this means for the CAF Confederation Cup Finals. There are now some rumors saying that they might play a match in neutral territory, one leg. I don't know with which jersey, but one leg in neutral territory, so to sort of determine who's going to make it to the final. But it's for sure going to be a very, very sticky mess that's probably not going to resolve itself over the next 7 to 10 days. So that's something that you guys can keep an eye on. Like I said, I didn't really want to talk about this at all, but if I want to, you know, cover the sport properly on this channel, I think I had to. And so that's how I saw the situation. I tried to portray the two sides of this conflict as best as I could. And yeah, if you have any questions, if you have any comments on what you think happened, hey, leave it in the comments below. But what's for sure is that this is not the end. this is not the end of the story. There's for sure that's a lot coming down the pipe, and lots of twists and turns. And yeah, it's going to be sort of a soap opera for the days and weeks to come. So something to keep an eye on. Anyways, we'll leave it there. Thanks for watching this episode of the African Five-Side Podcast. We'll pick it up again in a couple days for a preview of the second leg of the Champions League, which thankfully has a lot less controversy and a lot better football. Take care, everyone. We'll speak to you soon. Peace.